You are listening to Once a Raider, Always a Raider on the official Raiders Podcast Network. Here's your host, Jerry Knapp.
Welcome to another edition of Once a Raider, Always a Raider. I am your host, Jerry Knack, and I have a very special guest this week. He was a key member of the Raiders' 1983 Super Bowl championship team. He was a starting wide receiver. He's a seventh-round pick in the 1980 NFL draft. Please welcome wide receiver Malcolm Barnwell. Malcolm, how's it going?
Everything is great. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Yeah, thanks for coming on and chatting with me and Raider fans worldwide. Malcolm, what I always like to do with folks is talk to them about how they discovered the game of football and got into it in the first place. So how did you discover football and want to become a football player?
All right. It was like when I was a kid, somewhere around 6 years old, I think I was watching the Ice Bowl or something like that on the television. That's actually the first television football I seen on television. So I like, okay, I looked at it and it looked kind of exciting. I seen guys, you know, jumping and running and catching this ball. And obviously at that age, I could never keep still. So I told my mom, I said, when I grew up, that's what I'm going to do. I want to play football. She's the first, you got to finish school.
Yeah, school's kind of important.
So that's how I started. Yeah, my first interest in football.
And did you play youth football or high school? How'd you get into organized football?
Yeah. From that point, we had like playgrounds that was close to our home, and so they had little trials for like Pop Warner. So I got out there, and you know, I guess I did my little thing, able to run a little bit, and catch a little bit. Actually, I started off with being a quarterback. I was a quarterback from Pop Warner all the way through high school until I got to college. I actually started out being a quarterback. I was able to throw the ball at a young age. And so that was my first, you know, position at organized football, really quarterback. And I became a wide receiver in college.
And how did you get from South Carolina to Virginia Union? How'd that all happen?
Okay, actually, it was kind of strange because the way it really started, I was recruited by most of the schools in South Carolina, and then I went. We had like an all-star game here in South Carolina. We played at the University of South Carolina. So actually, I wanted to. They was recruiting me pretty hard, but I couldn't make my mind up. I couldn't make my mind up to which school I wanted to play for. And at the last minute, I decided to go to South Carolina, University of South Carolina. But I guess the signing time or something went wrong during that time, and they told me I think my signing was going to be too late, and they would have had to redshirt me. So I said, I need to play this year. So I think at that point, in order to go to a Division I school to play, you had to do it at a certain time. And the only way you can play that year is you go to a lesser division. So we had a lot of my high school guys that went to Virginia Union. I've never been there. So I decided to take a trip up there, and I went up into a place called Richmond, Virginia. And I spoke to the coach there, and they was able to let me play that year. So I signed up, and the rest was Virginia Union.
And they turned you into a wide receiver.
And they turned me to a wide receiver. My freshman year, they kept me at quarterback. And, to be honest, come to think of it, when the University of South Carolina, they recruited me as a quarterback, but they told me that I may have switched to wide receiver. And I think that hindered me from, signing them because I thought I really was still a quarterback. But when I got to Virginia Union, they allowed me to play quarterback my freshman year. And then after that, because I scored some running touchdowns, they decided to put me to a position called wingback, which is a combination of like a running back and a wide receiver. So that's how I ended up at the wide receiver position.
It's amazing how much the game of football has evolved, isn't it?
Yep. Yes, it has.
Well, so in 1980, you were selected in the seventh round of the NFL draft by the Raiders. How did all of that come about? Were you contacted by the Raiders ahead of time? Did you have any inkling at all that that you might end up with the Silver and Black?
No, not initially, because a lot of being on the East Coast, a lot of the teams, professional teams on the East Coast, I saw a lot of them, and I saw a lot of the Cowboys too. I think they had like a huge recruiting thing, and we had a guy from my school, Herb Scott, who had actually played with them, so they had visited our school before. So I saw a lot of them, and then there's just one day that they are, you know, you got this call that they tell you this or the scout from the Raiders wanted to, you know, come time all the seniors and work you out. So that's what I did. I went out there and we started working out. And, you know, I guess I ran a great time out there. And next thing I know, when draft day come, there was no way I thought I was going to end up, you know, being a Raider anyway on the West Coast. I just thought I was going to go to one of the teams on the East Coast. So all of a sudden, we end up going to an All-Star game in New Orleans. And it was called the Black All-Star game at that time. So that's where I met Willie Brown. So when I met Willie Brown, of course, we had to be timed and stuff. So, of course, I guess I ran a time that, you know, that was a rate of time. I always recall because, you know, they always like fast receivers. And so, actually, after that, once I did that and got back home and doing draft day, you know, I got the call from, like, Lou Erber, who was our receiver coach at that time. He called and said, "Hey, Malcolm, welcome to the Raiders. We've selected you in the seventh round." And I was like, wow. And that was like, you know, how I got started. But actually, when I got there, I found out that I was actually Willie Brown's pick at that slot. So that made me very, very happy.
Oh, that's a great story. So you come out to Oakland, your first training camp, 1980, and you've got Cliff Branch, Bob Chandler, Morris Bradshaw, Raymond Chester. You got a lot of good veteran talent on that team. Mark Van Egan was still on the team at running back. You had Kenny King, who'd come over from the Houston Oilers. You know, Dan Pastorini's supposed to be the starting quarterback that year, but you got Jim Plunkett on the team. Defensively, you've got players like Rod Martin, Ted Hendricks, Lester Hayes, Matt Millen's a rookie that year. Mike Davis is roaming the secondary. John Matuszak still on the team at that point. You come into a very, very veteran team in 1980. Were your eyes as big as dinner plates when you walked into training camp?
Hey, they were just as big as the moon. I mean, they were huge, coach. You know, these are the guys that I saw on television, you know, when I was, you know, growing up and being a teenager and in college. And I was like, wow, you know, I'm standing right next to them. I'm in the same locker room, in the same building with him, and get ready to go on the same field with him. And actually, what was so confident there, Raymond Chester is from the Virginia Beach area. And so happened our birthday is on the same day, June the 28th. So, you know, we kind of hit it off just being that, when, you know, when you start looking at the roster and seeing people's birthday. And I used to kind of hang around the veterans a lot. And, you know, and the thing about it, John Matuszak used to call me the secret weapon. You know, I remember when I got hurt in Washington, my rookie year, him and our big guy came, Philyard, they came and picked me up, and they're the two biggest guy on the field, and they came and picked me and carted me off the field to the sideline. And actually, like Matt was in my class. We always called each other classmate, the class in 1980. Matt Millen came in with us. And Matt was the type of guy we talked to all the time. Matt was just, you know, like we used to call him Bub. And we used to call him Bub because he was loud. He's a bubbly. So, you know, playing around with, you know, all the veterans that was there. And the thing about when I first got there, they had a quarterback called Dan Pastorini, who was actually the starter before Jim Plunkett was. And so me and Jim Plunkett got a lot of reps together in practice and stuff like that before Jim took over that year and led us to the Super Bowl. But I got a lot of reps with Jim a lot early in my rookie year.
Yeah, and, you know, like you said, you got hurt and missed that season. The team wins the Super Bowl that year. You know, by the time you're recovered from the hamstring, even though you're on injured reserve, you still got to be around the team, go to practice, do the different things. And you got to experience that Super Bowl at the Superdome in New Orleans more as a spectator, but you're still part of the team. What do you remember of that season and that experience?
Okay, the good thing about it was, in practice, you get to play. We used to play on what they call the scout team. So I would play all the first, the number one wide receiver for the other teams. I would play everybody, you know, on other teams, you know, I would practice against, you know, of course, the best the corner at that time. We didn't have Mike Haynes yet, but we had Lester, so I would go against them. And the thing about it, I could be everybody else, you know, number one receiver, except Harold Carmichael from the Philadelphia Eagles, who we actually ended up beating in the Super Bowl that year.
So you could have been Harold.
Because he was too tall.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could be Harold Carmichael if you put on some stilts. Right? I mean, you know, what was he, about 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", somewhere around there?
Yeah, somewhere in that area. So we used to let Derek Ramsey practice being Harold Carmichael in the scout team.
Sure.
So Derek's about like 6'5" at the time. So that was kind of a funny experience. But I used to always get, you know, like I said, I was always play with everybody else's number one. And so you got a lot of reps and practices. You know, it is unfortunate I just wasn't active that year.
Right. 1981, you get your first real game action, and you appeared in 16 games, got one start, and you had a turn as kick returner for a little while.
Yes, yes. So I did that. I did that in college. I started returning kicks. I had a couple returns there. My returns, well, I was so-so, but not as good as I wanted to be. But in 81, when I actually got the start, I think I became the number three receiver that time behind Cliff and Bobby. And I think Morris was still ahead of me then. And so, you know, that year we didn't have like a great year after the Super Bowl. But, you know, just to get the game time, live game time experience, that was great. And still, we still had some great veterans there. So that was a good learning experience.
Yeah, you know, we were talking, off air about that receiver room you had with Cliff and Bob Chandler and Morris Bradshaw. How did you fit in with those guys, and what did you take away from them?
Well, see, the good thing about it is, okay, they were all veteran guys. So, you know, they look at you as like the rookie. So, you know, you're going to be the guy that, hey, go do this, go do that. Oh, are you watching this or are you watching that? So, you know, you're going to pay more attention to them than they're going to pay to you. But one thing they would do, they would come out and help you, and especially Cliff. Cliff would like, you know, I was trying to find out how could he get out his brakes so fast and still run such a beautiful route. So, you know, he would tell you, and we had like certain steps that we had to do. And so I would pay a lot more attention to Cliff because, you know, he was a speed guy and I was a speed guy. But Bob Chandler had the great hands. You know, when I say great hands, Cliff's hand was okay too. But, you know, he's like the guy you went to on the third down, and, you know, he's going to get you that, you know, that 10 yards or that 7 or 8 yards. And then Bobby should run great routes too. But he's always concentrating on the ball. So, you know, I learned that from him just with the hands. But always, you know, tell you to catch it in the hands, keep the ball in the hands. And Morris Bradshaw is kind of like the instructor. You know, he would talk. You know, he's very articulate. He would tell you exactly what they tell you. He was kind of like repeating what they would say. And because they would say it on the run, on the move, and telling you, and then you go. And I used to always ask a lot of questions and stuff. Sometimes, you know, you should just stare at them. I was like a fan of all of them. So, you know, they helped me develop very, very fast.
Yeah, and you guys were really, really versatile at the skill positions at the time when you came in because, you know, I've talked to Raymond Chester and Kenny King, and, you know, you look at football today and you look at the 4 and 5 wide receiver sets and that kind of thing, and Raymond told me they didn't have to come off the field. They didn't have to go to these substitute packages because everybody knew all the routes, and they could shift into a 5-receiver set with the guys who were on the field and create all kinds of matchup problems all over the field.
And that was true because, you know, we had tight ends that could run, and we had possession because Raymond could have run. Raymond had, you know, he had, you know, wide receiver speed, and then, you know, we still had Caps through, we had Ghost. And, of course, you had the 2-star receiver, and then Warriors had a running back. They used to throw to Kenny King at that time. But when we got Marcus Allen, it's like you said, we could have easily turned into, you know, a 5 wide out just with the lineup that we had on the field.
Yeah, and that keeps the defense from bringing in 5-6 defensive backs, and they got to match up, you know, a linebacker on Marcus Allen, which that's a mismatch.
Yeah. Yes, that was. Yeah. And that was the good thing about it. Then, you know, Marcus always had the ability to throw. I always try to implement that, but some kind of way our coach kept saying, we haven't found a way to block that yet. Because I could actually throw, too. I could have thrown the ball, too. We practiced a couple of times in practice, but we never actually put it in the game. So we had a lot of talent on the field at the time.
Absolutely. So looking at the 1982 team, strike-shortened year, team moves to Los Angeles. You guys don't play a home game in L.A. until November, and it's a great game. You come back from down 24-7 at halftime to the Chargers and win a Monday Night Football 28-24. But that year they had a little different playoff seeding, and you guys were the best team in the AFC at the end of the year at 8-1.
That's right. See, now, actually, that's when we knew. We knew we were going to be a great team then. And that strike shortened year, we lost, I think, to the Jets during that time. But we thought, you know, we was really great at that time. We really thought we was great. We knew we were great then. The strike came up, and we ended up losing to the Jets. But actually, against the Jets, I didn't do pretty bad there. We lost a close game there. I did score, I think it was like a 60-yard or something like that, to take the lead. We just couldn't put it together. It was a home game, and, you know, we thought we should have won, but, you know, that day they were just a little better than us.
Yeah, that was 57, by the way, not to correct you. Raider Nation, you're listening to Once a Raider, Always a Raider. I'm your host, Jerry Nag, and I'm talking to former Raiders wide receiver Malcolm Barnwell. Malcolm, you played in 6 playoff games and started in all 6 of them, and you caught 15 passes for 301 yards and that touchdown in 82 in the playoffs. But that team in 83, 12-4, ran roughshod over a lot of people, won some close games. But, you know, that year the team brought in some guys like Lyle Alzado, made the trade for Mike Haynes, as you alluded to earlier. Van McElroy steps in at free safety. You got the best secondary in football at the time. But up front, you had Howie Long, Greg Townsend. Team still had Rod Martin and Ted Hendricks at linebacker and Bob Nelson. Offensively, though, the offensive line went through a transition as Art Shell and Gene Upshaw were no longer with the team. You do have some of the older veteran players, but now here comes a new crop of free agents and rookies. Marcus Allen's in his second year in 1983. But you guys were a juggernaut with Jim Plunkett at quarterback. You had taken over as a number 2 wide receiver from Bob Chandler opposite Cliff Branch. Todd Christensen had emerged as one of the best tight ends in all of football. Take me through 1983, Malcolm.
Okay, in 1983, okay, starting off. Like I said, in 1982, we thought we had a great team. Being a strike-shortened year, of course, we lost in the playoffs. It's kind of like, you know, you always travel, like everybody say, a chip on your shoulder. So from day one in training camp, you look around, and like you said, all the adjustments and all the new players that they went out and got, or, you know, like Lyle, and they brought in Mike. At that time, we just knew we was, like, going to be the best team in football. We knew we were the best team in football. So, you know, we went out, and being a good team like that, you know, you're going to have your ups and downs, but we won some of the close ones. And some of the close ones, we were excellent. We started off, I think we started off like 3-0, and we went up to Washington, and that's when I think that was our first loss that year. And they beat us late. But, you know, every game that we played, we always thought we could have won, and that one, we just didn't pull it out. So as the season went on, you know, we won the big ones. We had some close ones we may have lost, but close, we really wasn't a 12-4 team. We thought we was a 16-0 team, and that's what we really thought. Even when we lost, I mean, it was like, oh, we get them next week. You know, and then one thing about the Raiders, we always had this little cliche in practice. We used to practice so hard, so somebody always break out in a fight. Every time a fight broke out in practice, we're going to win that game. That's going to happen. Everybody says, uh-oh, we're going to win this week. And for some reason, it always happens. Now, I'm not saying that we fought every week, but when it did happen, we won those games. So that's one thing that we used to pay attention to. But that 83 team, oh, God, we thought we could have just won. We could have played 30 games that year, and we could have won every game. That's what we thought. And getting to the Super Bowl and running through the playoffs like we did. I mean, we got to the playoffs, and, oh, God, that was just like everything was convincing. We're not going home. We're going to win every game. We're going to the Super Bowl, and this was going to happen. So it just so happened that we ran into the Redskins in the Super Bowl. So you know that first loss of the 83 season, we remember that loss, and you know, sometimes things repeat themselves. So you know, we got better. We were just getting better because that was early in the season when we lost to them. So we got better, and it has caught us at a hot time. They caught us when we were hungry. We had that revenge in us. You know, we just wanted to, I mean, we didn't just want to win. We wanted to just destroy them. We wanted to leave no doubt that we was going to be, you know, we was the dominant team, always was the dominant team, and was definitely going to win that Super Bowl. That game was over no long before, but we didn't look at it like that. We'd have kept scoring and scoring and scoring if we had to, the opportunities. So that's why we beat them so convincingly.
Yeah, and, you know, the defense terrorized Joe Theismann in that game and got the Redskins to turn the ball over. Redskins were the defending Super Bowl champs going into that. And like you said, earlier in the season, you guys lost 37-35 at Washington. Marcus Allen didn't play in that game. And you did, as you mentioned, ran roughshod over Pittsburgh and Seattle in the playoffs that year. Beat Pittsburgh 38-10 in the AFC divisional round, and then beat the Seattle Seahawks 30-14 in the AFC championship game. And in 83, that was by far your best game, the AFC championship game. You had 5 catches for 116 yards in that game. In 2 games against Seattle earlier in the year, you only had 3 catches combined in 2 games against them. What was the difference for you against Seattle in the AFC championship game?
Well, you know, this is what happens is, you know, we still had Marcus, we still had Todd, we still had Cliff. So, you know, we're going to find a way to win. So it was just, you know, during the earlier part of the season, those was where we went. We were still putting our offense, you know, strategy together. So I remember before that, that AFC championship game, I remember Al Davis came to me and he said, look, we're going to get you going early. And normally, you know, when he said get you going, I said, I mean, they're going to come at you. But, you know, I always felt like that. But like I said, we had so many offensive weapons. And, you know, I was still a young guy. And, you know, of course, Marcus came in as a Heisman guy and starting running back and had an awesome season. So, of course, sometimes, you know, you just got to take back and play your role. And as long as you win, it doesn't matter. At least it didn't to me. I mean, of course, your chance is going to come. As long as you win. So, so happened in that game, particular game, you know, when he told me that they came, I was just ready. You know, I was ready. And, you know, they came, and actually I had most of them yards in the first half. And from that point on, we just kind of like cruised on out and keep, you know, bamming them and playing our physical football and, you know, just beat them convincingly. So that was, you know, that was excellent. Just like Al said, just win, baby.
And that was another one of those games where the defense, you know, they caused a lot of turnovers, set up a lot of scoring opportunities for you guys.
Yes, we had an awesome defense. Now you got to look at Rod, and you had to look at Ted Hendricks. You had to look at Reggie Kinlaw. You had to look at Howie Long. I mean, we had an awesome defense. Van McElroy, and you can't never forget them 2 corners that we got. We had the two, we had the 2 H's. We had Michael Haynes and Lester Hayes. So I mean, we had 2 excellent corners. So it's kind of like, you know, when we're off the field, you know, the ball can come back at any time. So you don't really put your helmet on the bench or put it aside. You kind of keep it in your hand and keep warming up because the ball can come right back to you at any time.
Exactly, and it often did, especially against the Seahawks in that game. They threw numerous interceptions in that game. They went to 2 quarterbacks, Dave Craig and Jim Zorn in that game, and neither one of those guys had much success. And then you went on to Tampa, the big sombrero, Tampa Stadium, to take on the Washington Redskins, defeated them 38-9. What do you remember about that game, aside from the revenge factor and wanting to pay them back for beating you earlier in the year? What do you remember of the Super Bowl experience?
Okay, the Super Bowl itself, okay, it really started off the way we got there. When we got there, it was in Tampa. Al made it like we were still playing in L.A. Because when we got there, we had all the billboards, you know, all our commitment to excellence, you know, our just win baby, all these Raiders, you know, everything you see is, you know, silver and black. And all the practices, you know, it was very, very, you know, intense practices, were very, very hard. But when we first got there, he made us feel so relaxed because, you know, of course, our families came. We got in. He gave us, you know, let us be independent. It wasn't like when we was in New Orleans, you know, everybody had their own little personal cars so you can visit with your family. But when you got to practice, it was all personal. He just let you be relaxed, just relax. And all of a sudden, you know, everybody's just, you know, looking forward to the game. And to have game day, oh, my God, game day was just like, you just couldn't wait. You know, the field was beautiful, nice, fast turf. in the locker room, you could kind of tell everybody come in and just, you know, having a good time. We were laughing. And then Lester Hayes came in and he played the song, or I forgot who it was, but it was "This Is It." And so he kept playing, so everybody kind of like listened. That's the only time it got quiet, because we kept listening to the song called "This Is It." I forgot who the guy who sang it. But anyway, he came in and he played that song. And of course, you know, we start getting dressed and you go out there and you see all your fans and you see this stuff. And like I said, you got this revenge thing on him. But we would play with so much, you know, with so much spirit and so much, we were just relaxed and so happy. But at the same time, we were concentrated. We concentrated on that game, I mean, I think, more than any game in the entire season. And plus, you're playing for all the stakes, too. You're playing in the Super Bowl. You're playing in Super Bowl 18. You got the whole world watching. So, you know, you're going out there, and everybody just wanted to do exactly, you know, their part. Just do exactly, just your part to help wins. Nobody wanted to do more. Nobody wanted to let the game come to you. And we just played like Raiders. We played that defense is just awesome. I mean, they were like, oh, my God. I was enjoying seeing them. I was watching. I had a couple more plays so I could just watch them dominate, you know. But they played great. And, of course, the offense, we stepped in, and we did some great things, and we ended up winning the game.
And, obviously, Marcus Allen, 191 yards rushing, and one of the most iconic runs in NFL, not just Super Bowl or playoff history, NFL history, with the 74-yard reverse field run as you guys won 38-9 in that game. What was it like for you, born and raised in South Carolina, small school, Virginia Union? Now, the Raiders are famous for finding talent everywhere, right? So you look at the team's history and you go back to the Art Shells and the Gene Upshaws and the Baltimore or Maryland College, wherever Art went to school, and Texas A&I is what it was called when Gene was there. All these – Willie Brown went to Grambling, right? So here you are from Virginia Union, and the PA announcer at Tampa Stadium in Super Bowl 18 announces at wide receiver number 80, Malcolm Barnwell.
No, I'll tell you right now, when I look at the they don't do it like they used to. You know, you get a chance. At that time, they announce your name, you get out to run out. Now, I look at it now, and I still get chills. My family still looks, and they kind of like, oh, wow, that really happened. Now, the thing about it, when I first got to the Raiders, what was so funny about it, when you introduce yourself, then the guys start teasing me. They said, what's the name of your school? Western Union? I go like, oh, God. So you call my school a telegraph. Telegraph company, right? Okay. But anyway, they used to tease me about that. But that was like a big thing for me. I mean, it was like huge. It's one of those childhood dreams. I mean, you actually seen yourself introduced. And the thing about it, we was always wondering during the season. We wondered when we got in the playoff, we was like, gonna see who's going to be introduced, the offense or the defense. And it just so happened to fell on the offense. And I was just so happy for that. That's a time that would go down in my family's history, and I would treasure that for the rest of my life. Just that introduction. The introduction was huge. Not as huge as the win, but it's huge. It was the first time I would go, I would look at that. But it was huge. It was very huge for my family and my Virginia Union or family there, too.
Oh, I bet. You know, it's like when you did that, it's like everybody who ever went to Virginia Union went with you. They all made it.
Exactly. And that was huge. That was a big thing. That put school on the map. I was just so happy. Oh, God, that was the biggest thing out there.
Absolutely. Now, when you came in 1980, as we talked about earlier, you know, you look at the guys that were on that team, you know, who are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame from the punter on down. Ray Guy, you had Ted Hendricks, Art, and Gene. As we talked about later on, you know, Mike Haynes is in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Ted Hendricks is in the Hall of Fame. All these guys are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And Malcolm Barnwell from South Carolina, by way of Virginia Union, you played in some of the biggest games in Raiders history alongside these guys. Did you ever have to stop and pinch yourself or say, wow, These guys are all Hall of Famers, and I was on the field with them. I played with them. I was one of them.
Well, just how I look at it, I think I all made them a little better. These guys were just great. They were great. And that's the thing about it. Now, when you think about it and you talk about it, and sometimes when I sit down and talk with some, you know, family and friends, and when you bring them guys' name up, right, and I tell them, I say, hey, you know, those are the type of guys that I play with. So, you know, they'll ask you a lot of questions, you know how it felt. Now, I said, but these guys are normal guys. So one thing that you realize about those guys that's in the Hall of Fame, they always, in big games and great games, they were like that every game. And then the big games, they got even greater. They got, I mean, they just stood up. I mean, they had a finger in every win and every great win that the Raiders ever had. And that's a long list. And then you got arguably some guys that should have been in there, like Lester and Cliff and Rod Martin. You know, there's a few of them that, you know, arguably can, you know, should still be there. But maybe that'll happen one day. But we knew we had a lot of great players. And it's just fortunate that, you know, we got that many Hall of Famers for all, but for, I mean, for basically, you know, almost all positions. But, you know, we got a lot of them in there. And that's a great feeling.
Malcolm, what's the one thing, if you could pick one thing, what's the one thing you're most proud of as a member of the Oakland/Los Angeles Raiders?
All right. I would think if I had to take it, I would say that, like, the brotherhood, the family type. The Raiders organization is like, if I had this narrow down, I would just say family. And like they say, once a Raider, always a Raider. That's in store. That's one of them things that's in you. It's just like everybody got a heart. That's in that heart.
You know, we met at Alumni Weekend up at training camp, and I think from everybody I've talked to, the Raiders have more alumni functions or grant more opportunities for you to get together, not only with your teammates, but with the guys who came before you and the guys who have come after you, than any other team in the National Football League.
Yeah, and I believe that. And the thing about it, I tell a lot of people that. I say, you know what? They always call you. They're always in touch. They remember your birthdays. You get birthday cards. I mean, it's and then the guys, you know, we always in contact. Like, you know, I just got off the phone a couple of days ago with Raymond Chester. I mean, because we all planning to come out to the game on December the 15th. We're coming out. It's a bunch of us going to be together from that, you know, from that championship team. We all will be there, and we just deciding how we're going to do it. So we always stay in contact. I mean, we very much in contact. Or, you know, we lost a couple of great players and stuff this year when we lost Cliff. You know, we all got together and we're going to be there. So we, you know, there's some of us that's always in contact, and that's just the Raider family.
Yeah, this has been a tough year for that. It kind of started last December with George Atkinson's son and with Warren Wells, and most recently we lost Willie Brown. It has been a tough year for the Raider family, but again, that's when you can lean on those guys that you played with, and the guys you barely even know, the guys who came before you. It's you know, you wore the uniform, you played for the same franchise, but this, you know, we like to also say there's 31 teams in the NFL, and then there's the Raiders. So
that's right. You know, that's exactly right.
You get to lean on those former coaches and players, even if you didn't play with them. They're still there for you.
Yes, they are. And that's the good thing about it. I mean, that's good. Like, I can't say anybody any better way than 31 teams, and then there's the Raiders.
Yeah, I wish I could claim that one.
And you see a lot of teams trying. They're trying to catch up. They're trying to do some of the things that we're doing. But they just don't have just the kind of camaraderie and the players that we have. It's really a brotherhood there. There's always connection there. And so the guys, you know, the guys recognize that, and that's the way we're going to take it until we're not here anymore. But that's how, but right now, I mean, we're enjoying it. I'm loving it. I'm feeling loved. I'm feeling a part of a family, and that's a huge family, and that's just the glory of it.
And one of the great things about my job is I get to tell these great and wonderful stories, and I get to tell your story, and I don't think we've ever really told your story in depth, so I really appreciate you taking the time to do that. This has been a great conversation. I've had a lot of fun chatting with you, Malcolm.
Oh, it's been a great thing. You just, hey, you got goosebumps going now. You got me want to call a lot of guys and stuff. Make sure I call them before they call me, because I miss them. And so I really appreciate it, and thank you for interviewing me.
Absolutely. You know, I had Mark Van Egan on a few weeks back, and, you know, bringing back all the memories. Mark was like, I'm getting all fired up. I want to put the helmet back on. Like, yeah, okay. I don't know about your knees for that one, but sure, why not? But, yeah, he, you know, all the guys love coming on the show and talking about the glory days and that kind of thing. What are you up to now?
Well, right now, actually, I was a stevedore, and I just retired. And so right now I'm kind of enjoying it a little bit. This is probably, let me see, this is my first year in retirement. So I'm kind of like just relaxing and enjoying my retirement. Or, I was stewardess for over 20-something years and stuff. And, of course, I always come to training camp every year. We've been doing that. And like I said, we're going to come back there. So right now I'm just going to enjoy the grandkids and just sit back and relax and just ride on out, just happily and just reminisce on some of the great times in my life.
Well, Malcolm, you have to be the first and only stewardess I've ever met in my life. So... congratulations on a great stevedore career. That's not a word you hear every day. It really isn't. It's one of those old school professions that people don't think exist anymore.
Yeah, I know. But it's been good for me. So it's been excellent.
That's
and
good.
Still the toughness is still in there.
Yeah, that's not an easy job. That's not no. Yeah, more power to you. Raider Nation, that's going to do it for this edition of Once a Raider, Always a Raider. For my special guest, wide receiver Malcolm Barnwell, I have been Jerry Knack. We'll talk to you next time. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Once a Raider, Always a Raider on the official Raiders Podcast Network.